You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo. Yeah.
Hi, everyone, and you're welcome back to Series 3, Episode 2 of Cawley's Call. We're delighted to say that we're up and running, Shu. Not just us. The league is up and running.
S3E2. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, today is the day when there's twos everywhere. Have you ever been reading about this?
Yeah, Tuesday. So
2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2.
I think there's another 2-2 after that as well.
And Tuesday being the second day. I think that's added into it. So it's twos everywhere.
Unbelievable.
Start manifesting.
It's two of us here.
The future.
It's two of us here today.
What are we going to do for the future? Take over Irish football.
Me to you.
Would you be good in that role?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
Would you bring me in with you?
Yeah, I bring everyone that's passionate about the game. But yeah, I would be good in that role, yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever see yourself down the line doing something like that?
I do. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. I've opened up a can of worms here. Let's go. This is like a job interview.
I'll probably step away from this stuff in a while.
Okay.
And go behind the scenes.
Okay.
And change the game forever.
Oh. And what have you in mind for me?
I may need somebody. I need a driver. Although after what happened the other day, I couldn't possibly depend on you as a driver. Do you want to tell us what happened with your car?
How do you know?
I know. So tell me.
I had a nightmare.
Why did your Audi? Can I just add?
I had a nightmare.
Very fancy.
I had an absolute nightmare.
Your Audi ended up on the back of a recovery truck.
Yeah.
Explain.
Down the back of Sheriff Street at all hours of the night.
Okay, so listen, if you need anything, you know, there's a better place to get it than Jarrow Street. I could put you on to a couple of people.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened.
Because this is part and parcel of the world of football for the fan. If they're going to games on a Friday,
yeah, well,
this is an issue.
This is a real life story.
This is a real issue.
This is a real life story. So I had been obviously given the league, the forward cell, all over, all week, anywhere we could, any platform, the podcast, radio, wherever we were chatting to people or whatever. So looking forward to the games. You were obviously working at the game Friday night. I was going along to watch, bringing little Harry with me. All excited. We were buzzing for the match. I had been over in 2FM doing the game on stuff on Friday evening. Right. The big sell again. I'm on my way to Talca Park. Can't wait.
So that's what I would hire you as. You would be executive of sales, head of sales. Straight away. Exactly.
Sure, they have a better role than that. Come on. So I left RT at 7 o'clock, whatever, heading up to game quarter date. So I came over the toll bridge, East Link, coming up by the Point Depot, taking a left to go up Sheriff Street and straight on up into Drumcondra or whatever.
Now, can we just, while you're on that, I never take that bridge. I hate it.
I know the bridge.
I always find the bridge
didn't cause the problem.
I always find that it gets jammed up. You like that? Okay.
I've judged the timings, I think.
Nice bridge and all, but I just always find there's always traffic and trouble. And
well, it's funny you mentioned the bridge, because it wasn't the bridge that caused the trouble, it was the feckin' island, right? So I turned left, and at the Point Depot, the first left or second, I think it's the first left, traffic lights. So that was grand, heading on up through Sheriff Street or on up that way. And as I turn left, you know one of these islands that are in the middle of the road, but you have to veer left to go around them?
No. if you're driving in a straight line, they just tend to go past you as you drive by them.
So I decided not to veer left and plow straight into it. And next thing, bang. Tire blew.
Oh, Lord.
So
on the Audi as well.
On the Audi as well. Big tires.
300 quid a tire,
big
probably.
Big tires.
300 quid a tire.
So I'm pulled in, side of the road, absolutely devastated, thinking, oh, fuck. We're not going to get to the match. Poor Harry's looking at me thinking, what's going on, Dad? What's wrong?
Ah, poor Harry.
I know. Devastated.
I don't feel sorry for you. I do feel sorry for Harry.
Now, I don't think he was devastated. He was disappointed. If it was Bose, he would have been absolutely devastated. he would have been. So
right.
It softened the blow a little bit that it was Shells and Pats. So rang AA or whoever we had to ring, but we're pulled in. at the side of the road. And
what time is that?
So this was all, this was 7:15. I made the first phone call today at 7:15. In my head I'm thinking, half an hour, 45 minutes, possibly somebody come out, fix the tyre, and may get the second half.
Now, if we, now hang on a second. If that was me, I would not ring DAA. I would have changed the tyre.
No, so you're slagging me about a fancy car.
No, not slagging
you. Right, no tyre, no spare tyre.
No spare tyre.
So it was, yeah, so a disaster. So ringing up, and next thing your man says, oh, we'd be the guts of an hour by the time we get out to you. The fella didn't arrive, right, till...
You didn't say you know who I am. You didn't do that, no.
I need to get the talk of her. I'm not like that.
I can't believe you haven't got a spare tyre. How come you haven't got a spare tyre?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not even the stupid one.
So you know what time you arrived out at? 10 o'clock, right?
Ah, shit.
So the whole night gone. Then when he arrives and he's looking at it, going to fix the tyre, not fix it because he says, look, it's blown, but he was going to put a spare one on just to get me up to Raheny. The tyre at the back is gone. So the two of them blew out with that one little collision into that island. The curb, bang.
Yeah.
So then he has to ring a truck. He says, I can't help. He leaves me in the lurch. I'll ring a truck. Now they were sound. He was sound. Rings the truck. It was 11 o'clock. So there I am being towed away on the truck. Me and Harry getting into the back. It was like a bin man truck. And there's me and Harry at 11 o'clock. Absolutely devastated. The night gone. But the only plus point, and this is why I'm going to give you an analysis of your performance, Sky Go is the best app ever. Sky Go. So me and Harry were sitting on the side of the road, Sky Go in front of us, Stewie and Conan watching the match, didn't miss anything.
Ah, brilliant.
So it actually, it worked out.
Did you put the Bluetooth on the sound in the car and
everything?
Ah, yeah.
So Dara Byrne's goal goes in, I could hear you up in the gantry going banana. Yeah. And we got to see the match, so I suppose that passed a couple of hours rather than being just stuck there. But it was a disaster. Moving on then to Saturday, right? So I had to go back down to Raheny Saturday morning with get the train down because I had no car.
To be fair to the fella,
he brought me up to Raheny, left the car there, and we got a taxi.
Audi Gars in Raheny, yeah?
Best drive,
okay.
Shay. If Shay is listening, how are you, Shay? Looked after me Saturday morning. Fair play, friend of the pod.
This week's show was brought to you by Best Drive.
Wants to sponsor next week's show. So he might even join us, Shay. He started giving me the lowdown on the new season.
The Best Drive.
So he fixed the tyre, said anything. Okay, well, at least I'll get one League of Ireland game in. Bowes Sligo, I'm heading down to Sligo Saturday. And then Storm Eunice, another gobshite. Who names these storms? Storm Dudley was it last week?
When was the game called off on Saturday? Saturday morning. Yeah.
So that was my weekend, Stu. That was the start of my 2022 League of Ireland campaign.
I know the weather. To be fair, the weather is really. It's been a very unique start to the season. I have to say, you know, four teams didn't get to play a game of football.
Through no fault of their own,
and through very, very little notice. I mean, literally, this thing turned in a couple of days, didn't it? I mean, up until Wednesday, it wasn't looking that bad. And then I know we knew storms were coming through, but. I remember I even went in, I think they did off the ball on it was a Thursday.
It was expected
that everything would clear by Friday.
And you know something?
I know, we can be honest, part employers, but
I love that you kept all the good stuff for me and they got the shitty stuff. Thanks a million, Stu. Fair play to you, a loyal friend as always.
Yeah, we have to, you know.
So that was the weekend. It was a disaster, but you're right about the games. But there was three games on, Stu, which we are going to get into, and that's why I wanted, there's no guests this week, people, because I wanted to chat, just me and Stewie, about the football and the games, what we watched, and looking forward to this week's. And we do have a guest lined up for next week, and we will have a guest most weeks. We'll mix and match as we did last season, but we're quite selective here. So I just wanted to chat with Stewie this week, and we're going to kick it off, Stu. We mentioned already, obviously, I was going to go to the game. You were working. Your thoughts?
I was freezing.
3-0 win for St. Pat's.
3-0 win St. Pat's. Okay, let's set this first of all. Talk was brilliant.
Just about to say thanks. I'm glad you said. Before we get to the football, what was the atmosphere?
It was brilliant. It just felt like talk of old. I don't know what it was. I couldn't put my finger on it. Look, it, it, the 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 you know, the weather was awful. It really was. And to be fair, it was even bad
on the night.
It died down literally just as the game was kicking off. I think even the warmth was difficult. When I got down there, it was not. I mean, there was nearly a blizzard on the way down to the place. Mm. I mean, I left at 5 o'clock and a little kind of a quick blizzard came in about 4:15, and you're thinking, oh no, this is gonna really scupper the whole thing, like, you know. And psychologically, as a player, it's difficult to kind of put them. To be fair, players were brilliant, all in great form before the game. Talcott was buzzing. Mm. I don't know whether it was because the gantry we were on was on the riverside in the corner there. I've never been there for the match in that position. The stand behind the goal, the Drumcondra end, is closed. So obviously the Shells fans are now congregating on the riverside, which I have to say, I don't know why they never did that before. Because when we played there, they were never there. They were either behind the goal, Drumcondra end, or they'd be in the main stand. But it was great to see them there, because that's a great stand.
That's the biggest stand in the
and
ground.
And it's probably the best atmospheric stand for kind of creating a bit of a buzz around the place. So see them there. And then, of course, they had a terrace.
Yeah,
put up with actual bars for putting your hands on, like proper like old school terrace. And the Pats crowd were down there, and they looked like they were loving it.
Brilliant,
you know,
crowd.
They were loving it, and the place just had a completely different look to it. Mm. And in the build up, there was talk of being delayed. It was that kind of stuff. It had a long time since I've been in the ground where they were talking about it possibly being delayed because they can't get the crowd in. But as we were doing the we went on there at 7:30. You could just see the crowd are coming in. It was just brilliant. It was just brilliant to see. Mm. And then the game, I just loved everything about the game.
Before you get to the game and you're touched on the weather and the crowd, to me, looking at it on the telly, and I saw a few comments on Twitter from people, how did the pitch play?
So I got worried about the pitch. I always walked the pitch before. I don't know, it's a habit I have. I will always walk the pitch beforehand. I was worried about the pitch. I knew the pitch was a couple of weeks behind anyway going into the game. I didn't want to bring that up because you just get people dumping all over. But the people who look after the pitch probably be a couple of weeks behind when they started. I think they only got going on three or four weeks ago. Probably could have done a start maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago. I walked the pitch. I felt it was soft on the riverside. I was very worried about it. However, it didn't play that way. It didn't cut up. Mm. To be fair, it didn't cut up. Now, look, it wasn't perfect. And it will be, I'd say, give it another 3 or 4 weeks, it'll be stunning. Like, you know, not ideal, I have to say. You know, when you're on, you know, live on TV, you want everything to be looking right, and everything should be right. But considering the weather conditions and everything that came into play, it didn't cut up, which I have to say, which thank God it didn't. Could have been better. Mm. I know Chris Forrester alluded to the fact that it was a bit bobbly, and it probably was as well. But certainly for me, it didn't take anything away from the spectacle or the quality on the pitch from both sides, I have to say.
Okay.
From both sides. I expected Pats to be strong. I thought they would be in the ascendancy coming off the back of their display against Shamrock Rovers.
Where they played really well in the
President's Cup, and they didn't get gone, Pats. And to be honest, Shells were excellent in the first 15 minutes. Mm. You know, just like really, really good shape about them, hungry, you know, good discipline, knocking the ball around. Had Pats in a little bit of trouble from set pieces. Probably, I know it was a disallowed goal. Well, it was disallowed. Probably could have gone 1-0 up, maybe snuck a lead, and then.
Well, that was definitely offside. But
the
second free kick, which was carbon copy of the one previous, that the goal was disallowed. The young lad, was it Moylan at the back post?
Yeah,
he could have headed.
I think he misjudged it because the wind kind of, it seemed to die in the wind. He totally misjudged it. That he's a hell of a player, that kid.
Very good.
He was the shining light. He stood out a mile. To be fair to Conan Bourne, he had mentioned him to me beforehand, and my lord, I didn't think he'd be that good. So he's definitely one to watch because he's quite tall, Alan. Yeah. Like, you know, and he can move his feet, like, you know, and he's one of these players that if he sees 5 yards, he takes it in a stride. Like, you know, I remember Keith Fahey used to be a little bit like that as well. Could kind of gain 5 yards in one sort of stride, just hungry to get into that space. And he caused.
He got himself into great positions. Just the lack of a finish, I suppose. But.
Yeah, I mean, let's go through it. Like, you know, Shells played very, very well. Opened really well, and it looked like this where Pats just didn't get going, and they might have been in a bit of trouble. Mm. And then, of course, the mistake, loose possession by Shells.
Young Hawkins,
still, you know, there's still players there to defend it, you know, and then all of a sudden Darragh Burns just comes up. It's out of this world. It was stunning. You know, it was a stunning strike, and it was out of nothing, absolutely out of nothing. And it did rock Shells, I have to say. And it could have gone 2-0 down. I think Mark Doyle had an opportunity where they could have went 2-0 down. And they needed to, I think at that stage they were able to kind of steady the ship a little bit, needed to get to half time just to settle them down, which they did, 1-0 down. And then you're thinking, to be fair, you're thinking at half time, I liked a lot of what I was seeing from Shells. I thought, looking at Pats, I expect Pats to contend.
Okay.
They've got loads in the tank. They'll only get better. You know, they're not at it yet. Certainly not based on the performance the other night. They're not at it yet, but they'll just get better, and they'll get better and better. But certainly at half time the other night, you're thinking, Shells, they don't concede again. They've got a goal in them. And then they came out and they blew three or four opportunities. They should definitely have been 1-1. It could even have been 2-1. And it was just down to a little bit of conviction and finishing. Carr had an opportunity, which I mean, 9 times out of 10, he bangs them in. You know, cross comes in from the left-hand side. It's right
on
his foot.
He never hit it.
Bang, put your foot through it. Like, you know, you don't even have to do anything. Just put your foot through it. The pace will beat the goalkeeper. And then what happened was just a little bit of naivety, lack of belief maybe. And you can see the young team, the inexperience maybe coming into the Premier Division, and that's something that he'll have. You know,
and a new squad of players.
Yeah. But Alan, for a new squad of players, my God, I was quite impressed by how they played. I know people are probably looking at this going, I don't know what he's talking about. I do know what I'm talking about. They will only get better, Shells. And let's just kind of quickly go through it. Caught again out of poor possession, which they kind of sloppy pass. Thought O'Driscoll maybe could have gone and met the.
He struggled most.
He could have gone and met the ball. I mean, if you take an experienced player will take the man down, take the free kick. It's on halfway line. Instead, he backs off and they're just backing. Keeper gets beaten near post. Should never really. I mean,
big call for me to leave Clarkey out.
Yeah, well,
Brendan, obviously a new goalkeeper.
Brendan, that's his first.
Yeah, I thought that
game.
Was, and I wasn't mad on the goalkeeper. So it'll be interesting to see what he does this weekend. Obviously, you're speaking about an inexperienced team and a new team, but Clarkey has all the experience you want. Look, Damien Duff picks the team, and that's fine. But I was surprised by that call, I have to say.
Yeah, but he hadn't had much to do in the game, to be fair, and he's pulled off a couple of good saves as well. I think he pulled off one from Forrester, and a couple of other good saves. Saves he'd expect him to make, but he certainly. I just thought maybe. For that goal, it's kind of one where...
Is he thinking he's going to go across him?
What I think happens, Al, is he doesn't move his feet quick enough. He needs to steal another yard at least with his feet. He needs to move his feet another yard just to kind of close off that near post. If you get beaten far post, you get beaten far post. Don't get beaten on your near side, like, you know. And then I think he's caught between, do I go down, do I drop me? When, for any goalkeeper, you know, any striker, when you strike a ball close to their feet, that gives them trouble. Because they've got a decision to make. Do I go down low with my left hand? Do I drop my hand low? Which is quite difficult to do, to drop your hand, whether it's your left or right hand, to drop it low but quite near to your feet. If you even try to do that, it's quite an awkward thing to do. So you've got a decision to make. Do I go with my feet or do I go down with my hand? He made the decision to go with his hand, and you know, I don't know whether he would have looked at it afterwards and said, listen, use your feet. You know, just use whatever you can to block it. But I think they'll be disappointed from all points of view of that goal because... Yeah. They were on top. They were playing really well. Had 2 or 3 really good chances. Could have been 2-1 up at the time. So they give away a stupid pass. O'Driscoll doesn't. He needs to go and nail and take the yellow card. And then he's running from the halfway line. He's not being contended.
He was very good on the night. Mark Doyle
very good in the night. Yeah, very good in the night. And then Forrest just came into. He went into the stratosphere. He was nuts at people and he was shooting from 30 yards out and. Yeah, ridiculous stuff, like, you know. But the takeaway for me was two things. Shells, if they play like that, first half, especially first 20 minutes, against any other team other than Rovers, Derry or Pats, they'll win games. They pick up points. Simple as that. So they have to... I think Duffer's point of view, I think what they need to do, Alan, is, and you will know this as well as a player, when you've not played well and you've won, you need to say to yourself, we didn't play well. We've gotten away with it there. And when you play really well and get beaten, or when you play poorly and you win a game, you also need to go, listen, you know, it's that kind of, you have to know when you haven't played well and you know, make sure that the result doesn't kind of gloss over the issues. So as long as he addresses the issues, I think
they're in good shape. I thought his interview after the match was very good. He was obviously happy with the performance, with a lot of what he's seen. Yeah. Of course, people who didn't see the game and look and think 3-0, did they get hammered or anything? I agree, it wasn't that. It wasn't a hammering at all. Pats were probably a bit more efficient, a bit more clinical, the top end of the pitch compared to the Shells. I thought Pats were good, particularly in the second half. I thought in the second half Shells were huffing and puffing a lot more than maybe in the first half, whereas I thought Pats got on top and took control, particularly as Youssef Forster grabbed the hold of the game and was running the show really as he does. So my takeaway is I think Shells will be fine. I don't see them contending for Europe or anything like that, but I think all they need to do, Stu, this year is just stabilise the club and just establish themselves back in the Premier Division and build from there. I don't think they should be setting their sights on too many high aspirations in terms of unrealistic targets. Now, I don't think, to be fair to Damien Duff, I don't think he said anything about that, so I'm not labelling that at him. I just think the club as a whole, especially with the good news coming off the pitch with the whole Talca Park campaign and great news, which obviously we'll mention as well, and the proposal has gone into Dublin City Council to buy it back. Also, the investment that's coming, I think, from another US-based investment. So there's really lots of positives going on around Shells at the moment, which is good. Just establish themselves back in the Premier Division. Finish mid-table. Finish sixth. Have a good season, as you say. Be competitive in most of the games, the majority of the games. And they'll be fine.
I take that point. I tell you what, I'll just switch the path for a minute, just to be fair to Pat. I don't want everyone to be, you know, barking on me, oh, Shells, whatever, the way you do about Bowes Way. So what I'll do is I'll switch the path. And I'll agree with you about Pat's. Definitely didn't start the game well and could have been in trouble. But got them, obviously, with the quality of Bourne's strike, you know, when you've got players like that, not himself, you've got Owen Doyle, even looks like Mark Doyle now. He's certainly rising the chance. And of course, Chris Forrester, they can put one in from 30, 25 yards out top corner. They have that ability to do that, like, you know. I thought they were I wouldn't say cruise control, but they were definitely managing the game in the second half. And they got their goals, and so they're coming away thinking, I wouldn't say an easy night for us, but like a good result for them. I think there's loads in the tank. Pats, I know Chris Forrester didn't say this after the game, and that's fine. They have to be thinking they can win this league. They just have to be, Alan. That simple.
Yeah, and I think they are, to be fair to them.
It's that
simple. I think Forrester answering that question in the way he did was dead right. He can't come out.
Oh, God, I know, totally.
He can't come out. We're totally going to win the league.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, but I just, within the camp, they have to be thinking this.
Of course, they should have played Shamrock Rovers the week before and should have beat them.
Yeah, and it's just the quality that they have. And I know they've lost players, but what they've lost in different areas, they've gained in like the two Doyles. They just have a real work ethic about them, a discipline. There's goals in them.
I think the forward department looks better than what it did last year.
I'm even thinking. I don't know if you can remember the second opportunity that Mark Doyle had when the ball's come in for Owen Doyle, and he probably should have gone and headed himself, but he's laid it down back to Mark. So that's sort of
a little understanding.
His little understanding starting to come in. He's thinking of the teammates around him, like, you know, and that's probably epitomises his own. I mean, we know we spoke to him here last year, like, and I think he's just a brilliant guy to have around the dressing room. If they can keep him fit, which he looks very fit, he looks strong, he looks
after himself really well, and he's here to prove a point, Shu, as well. We spoke to him here.
Well, he wants a trophy.
I don't mean prove a point as in he's here to show people he's a great player. We all know that. I mean, he's over here for the right reasons, and he wants to make an impact in the league and in the club, and that's the desire and determination that he has, and rightly so. And Tim, I think, deserves a lot of credit as well, because Tim set them up. All the talk was duff, kind of took a bit of pressure off Tim, maybe.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But I think he handled it really well in how he went about it. Even beforehand, he wasn't getting lulled in or sucked into anything in terms of him against Duff or anything like that. I thought he handled himself really well on the night. And even just now that you bring it up, you think we covered the cup finals, Stu, and there was the debate around you of Dara Burns. I know Coughlin was in and out, Maddie Smith and maybe Billy King, and that was the debate around who would play for Pats. I think the forward department now...
it's nailed down.
of Owen Doyle and Mark Doyle and Dara Burns is a better tree because than what they had last year.
Because it's nailed down, that's it. You know, that's your tree. End of story. You know, there's no
I think Lennon compliments Forrester really well. He deserves a lot of praise because in the President's Cup he does a lot of his donkey work. Whereas last year again they were playing a tree. I think that suits them with those two. And I think it was a Billy King played ahead of them. Billy King looked very good in that central area as well the other night. So Young Abanku at the back looks a proper player, doesn't he? He's only 18.
Like. Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you the story. But when we'd cover Pats and Rovers last year, we were out there towards the end of the season. I think it might have been, and it wasn't the end of the season. Probably July, maybe August. It was later. It's the game that Rovers grabbed last minute winner. Should have been nil all, to be quite honest with you.
But that was right at the start, was it not?
No, it was at the end. Sorry, I think it was September. Okay. September, and the Rovers got a late goal. Yeah, and last minute stuff really should have finished nil all. I remember in the warm up, watching this kid in the warm up. He wasn't playing. I think he was on the bench, but they were obviously talking about the fact that he'd just done his leave in cert. So immediately you're attracted to the young kid, like, you know. And fuck me, I could tell by the warm up. I said that's a player. I think he'll end up playing midfield. I think he'll be a midfielder. I think the way he moves his feet, he's so dynamic. He looks like he's just got such composure. He has this inner confidence in himself, but he's not a swagger. He's not overly aggressive. There's a modesty. I just think he's a player, like, you know. And it's unfortunate now that he's obviously gone to.
Well, it's great for him. It's unfortunate for Pat, but good luck to the young fella.
Well, it is brilliant.
And it's brilliant in terms of how we'll tune in and watch his development, because even looking at him, 18 years of age the other night, cruise controlling. I think there was one, he played a square ball in the first half across the pitch. You'd allow him that. He was brilliant on the night. He was absolutely brilliant.
Well, he plays like he's 25, 26. Yeah.
And he played, remember in the cup final, the same thing. Yeah. Nothing fazed him. You're right, that temperament that he has where he kind of just takes it in a stride. So you're going for Pats, actually, you think, to contend, Stu?
Yeah, well, I mean, I said it last week, and mainly off the fact that I felt they should be looking to contend. And I like who Tim has brought in. I like Tim, to be quite honest. I think the opportunity that's come across his way is just, he has to grab it with two hands. He really does. And I think he's doing that so far.
He knows the game. I've had many a conversation with him. He's very good.
He's doing that so far. But having seen him the other night, I just think they've got loads in the tank. I think they're only going to get better and better.
The only place I see, because at the start, I obviously Shamrock Rovers to win it, and I thought Derry would be the nearest challengers. And I haven't veered away from that, and obviously we're only a game in. But what I watched with Pats on the President's Cup, I was so impressed with them. And obviously the other night as well. Where I think they may come a little bit unstuck, Stu, is just numbers in terms of the squad. You mentioned keeping Doyle fit, an injury to Forrester. Whereas you look at Shamrock Rovers and you look at the bench the other night, like, their bench is as strong as it reminded me of Shelsky when we signed Crow and Bobby Ryan and all.
Do you remember
the two day when we used to play 11v11s in training, and they were harder than games you'd play out in league matches?
Yeah, and of course
the squad was unbelievable.
That effectively
cost us.
It cost us in 2005. Yeah, it did. You know, we didn't turn up, but it took us two months to get going.
Because I looked at the team sheet the other night for Shamrock Rovers, and then you look at the bench, and sure, it's unbelievable the squad have. So that's the area, I think. And but who knows? Come this summer, if Pats are in a really strong position, you mentioned it here last week, they're in a position where they can. I think Gareth has backed them heavily over the years. I'd say he would go in again if they were in a position where they were looking like maybe winning the league. So it's been a great start for them. They're playing Sligo Rovers on Friday. Of course, Sligo Rovers didn't play a game last weekend. We all know that. And I've been fairly unimpressed with what's gone on with Sligo over the off-season in terms of players they brought in. So you'd fancy Pats to maybe
they have two competitive games under now under their belt. So they're already starting to go through the gears. Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd fancy Pats strongly. Shells are away in Drogheda. Again, Drogheda, the game was called off. I was chatting to Kevin. He was disappointed about that, but totally understands or understood as to why. That's a tricky game to call, really, Stu. Drogheda and Shells Friday night.
Yeah, well, look, especially because it's away. Drogheda is always a difficult place to go.
They've had a good pre-season as well.
Pre-season. I mean, I think at this stage of the season, you kind of expect everybody to be not to be in terms of quality to be at it, but to just be physically fit and at it, like, you know. And then you had that sort of energy going into the games, where the games will be 90 miles an hour, like, you know. So I've always been of the opinion that games will always be tight in the first 3, 4, 5 games, and I'd expect even UCD to do quite well in the early parts of the season. It's only really 5, 6 games into where you start to see the cracks, you see the quality start to come through. So very little in that game draw to the Shells. I mean, from Shells' point of view, I think they'd be happy enough to come out of there with a draw, to be quite honest with you.
Okay, that takes us nicely then to the other game on the night. There was two others, but Dundalk against Derry, and you mentioned the game's been 100 mile an hour. I've spoken to 2 or 3 people who were at this game, Stu, and apparently it was 100 mile an hour. Yeah. But a great game to watch.
Yeah.
But it was end to end, hustle and bustle, very little in terms of players taking control of the game or running the game from midfield. It was literally just, you didn't give it a minute. You didn't get a typical League of Ireland type game. You didn't get a second on the ball. Derry were missing a few. Obviously, we mentioned the signings, and I had tipped them to be contenders. They were missing a few of the key players. McElhenney only came on, so they have all to come back. But I think the fact that Dundalk had taken the lead twice, they went 1-0 up, then 2-1. Derry coming out then with 2-2. I know they hit the bar late on. They'd probably be disappointed with that. But overall, you'd probably look at it with the players that were missing as well as a good point on the road.
That was my takeaway. That's a difficult game. Yeah. Dundalk at home, it doesn't matter.
Huge crowd.
Yeah,
again,
it's not the same.
Crowd.
I mean, I know it's not the Dundalk of 3 or 4 years ago, but it's still a very, you know, there's still going to be a decent side this year. And they've brought in a lot of players, Dundalk. And as you say, yeah, big crowd. But to travel there and to go down twice and come back from that, and they probably should have won it all, to be fair. And they probably showed in the night that they were worth maybe the 3 points. I think that's shows a little bit of character in this Derry City side. And all of a sudden, they do look like they've certainly improved on last year. That experience. My worry with Derry was always going to be the fact that when you bring in the players of a McElhenney or a Duffy.
Duffy didn't play.
They're so used to winning league titles, and they're so used to standards being a certain way, that if they were to go in at Derry and if things weren't to be right to their expectation, if the only way you can get frustrated. And you know, but
I don't think that's the case.
I agree. I don't think that's the case. I think Rory, to be fair to him, is the type of manager that will manage that very well. He probably would have set expectations with McElhenney Duffy. Say, listen, get in and have a chat with the lads. You know, talk to them. Tell them what standards are like, and so on and so forth.
To be fair as well, Rory's coming from that Dundalk environment. He's coming from the Ireland set-up environment. Very professional in his approach. Rennie's with him as well. Huge experience. And obviously Rennie would have good standards about him. In with Jim with the 21s as well. I don't see that being an issue at all, Stu. And McElhenney came on, Duffy was missing, Boyce was missing. There's 3 starters, you would think, you know. So overall, 2-2 draw. I'm sure Rory was happy with that, considering the players he was missing. And as you say, like, I know it's not the Dundalk of old, but there's still Andy Boyle,
that's
Robbie
a strong
Benson,
Dundalk team, yeah,
Paul
absolutely.
Doyle is a very good player. Hoban played as well. So I know they're very much in transition, and that's going to take time, that whole Dundalk.
No, I think you'd be delighted, Alan. I really do, because I think it's significant to like, again, just reiterate, come back from a goal down on 2 occasions. Going into this week, because they're playing Rovers at home, if they had been beaten, different story. Mm. Like, you know, where, so it's amazing what even you know, I know it's early in the season, like, but it's an away point to the likes of Dundalk. It just gives you confidence. You know, it gives Rory confidence as a manager. I'm doing things right. We're okay. We're on the right path here. Like, you know, and that'll only just help this Derry team. Let's see how Friday goes.
So
because
you've teed it up lovely. Derry Shamrock Rovers, Stu, Friday night, second game on the telly. I'd say there'll be 5,500-6,000 at the match.
Yeah.
Shamrock
Actually,
Rovers.
What's the capacity?
I don't know. That's what I'm just thinking. So I'm Ryan McBride going, now. I'm going along the lines of 5,500-6,000. I might be wrong. If I am, tell me. But there'll be a bumper crowd. It's sold out already, I think.
I'll be hopping. Yeah.
It'll be a bumper crowd. I'm sure Shamrock Rovers will bring a huge away contingent with them as well. So it has the makings of being an absolute cracker, because in my view, these are the 2 main protagonists, I think, to go and win the league. Of course, Shamrock Rovers, as we know, but I think Derry, in my opinion, will be the closest to them.
There's no doubt about it. Derry will have a big say in it. It's, you know, the fact that there's been investment in the club. They've managed to bring in the likes of the players of the calibre of McElhenney and Duffy, and patching as well. You know, they've signed very well in the and if you look back, if you look at it, you know, Rory's been eyeing this up for seven, 8 months now. I mean, the McElhenney deal was done back in July, June, maybe. Yeah. I remember, it was causing a little bit of an uproar in Dundalk. But, you know, there's been a focus on this season for a considerable time now. And look, in a way, I feel a little bit sorry for Rory, because he's got to deal with this expectation of their owner being a billionaire, like, you know, which is
it's going to be brought up every week.
It's quite a rarity, like, you know. I mean, every week you're playing in the Premier League, but I mean, I suppose if the owner could give Rory a lend of his yacht every now and then to kind of take a break, him and Frank Lampard. although Abramovich probably won't be a billionaire now after.
Are we going down the political route now as well?
No, I won't go there.
You look at Shamrock Rovers' team that played the other night. So Manus Grace, Sean Hoare, Pico Lopez, Andy Lyons actually made a start. Jack Byrne, Ferrugia came off injured again. He's cursed that poor young fella. Danny Mandriau, Gary O'Neill, Dylan Watts and Rory Gaffney. So he went, Stu, you look at the three players that didn't even come on. Sean Gannon, Chris McCann, Ronan Finn.
Jeez.
And he made five substitutions as well. Burke came on, Barry Cotter, Aaron Green, Richie Towell. So he went with what I said to you last week about if there's going to be an issue or a problem, it's managing obviously those big personalities or big egos, whatever. He went with Gary O'Neill is always going to play, as I said.
I think he'll play as much as possible.
He will be the one, because he's the only one that does that role.
Yeah. And you can't have Jack playing there either, to be quite honest with you. Or Towell, doesn't suit him. Like, you know, it's not part of that game.
And then Jack will always play, because he's their best player. Mandriau, I think, will always play. And he went with Dylan Watts. So the two that and I they were the ones we had predicted. So Towell and Burke came on as subs. Will Richie Towell be happy or Burke to be sitting on a bench every week?
I would have thought no, to be quite honest with you. But that's the modern problem now. Like, I mean, I've often tried to think about how modern players think about the game, because in my day, in our day, we didn't have big squads the way they do now, and rotation was
especially with the quality.
I mean, I remember when I had to play, like, I mean, you'd have to play through injuries and all to play, like, you know. It was never a thing, like, you know. So it depends on how you embrace that rotation. I think the key thing for me, for Rovers, for me, has always been, especially this season and in pre-season and going into, Stephen Bradley has to try and convince this group of players that it's not just about, you know, the league. It's Europe is a huge thing. I think he has to get that focus in the players that what they're doing now is purely preparation for Europe when it comes around in the summer. Because I expect them, and they should be expecting to at least get into the group stages of the conference of the Conference League. That carrot is huge, and they've learned, I hope, lessons from last year. I certainly hope they've learned lessons from last year.
But I know
they've never been better placed to qualify for the group stages of a European competition than they have, I think, this year. I think everything is in place, and as long as you can keep that the squad of players happy, as long as you can rotate them. To be fair, he's always kind of rotated.
Yeah, so far.
Hopefully, that culture is there in the club, and players accept it.
Yeah, and to be fair to that's the thing. To be fair to Stephen Bradley, he has managed that situation very well up to this point. But you look at now Jack coming back into the fold. Mandriau got to go off to a great start. A great header he scored as well. You remember he obviously got 15 goals last year. Great start for him on the opening night. So he has managed it well, and to me, look, this is the reality of it as well. Jack and Mandriau are better than the other two.
Yeah, the dynamic and the balance is better.
But I just think they're better players anyway. I think Jack is the best in the league, and I think Mandriau has the potential to be, I think, even better and go further afield.
Yeah, and I was just going to mention that the possibility of one of those four or five midfielders moving on in the summer is a very strong possibility. Yeah, I'm sure Rovers, you know, they're now a progressive club. They're going to listen to offers, like, you know, because they have to develop, and there's obviously a financial model there. So I would imagine that's definitely a possibility. Let's see if any of them get into the Ireland setup. I know, is it the Belgian friendly coming up in March?
March, yeah.
very good possibility you might see a couple of League of Ireland players, and they're dependent on injuries to others. But I would imagine, I would have thought Jack Bourne on merit should be
well, he is asked,
should be definitely in that squad. Yeah. And you might see Mandrew sneak in as well, yeah.
So that's the game Friday night, Stu. Do you want to make any prediction on it, or are you just happy to, we're only two games
I can
in?
I can see it being very competitive, high energy. I it's very difficult to see a winner from it, I have to say. I think Rovers will come up, and they'll be difficult to beat. I can see that being a draw, I have to say. Maybe 1-1, 2-1 possibly.
I've just been informed by our brilliant producer Paul Morris that the Brandywell's capacity is 3,700. Now either Paul is drunk or or the fella in Google is drunk.
But the way I was thinking, because of the fact that it's surrounded by houses, if you can get 20 people on the roof of every house, this is Derry, by the way. I think you can get another 4,000.
I'm telling everyone. I'm going around telling 5,500, 6,000. I'm telling everyone. I have said that to more people.
I'm expecting 9,000 at this game on Friday. I'm very disappointed it wasn't 9,000.
So look, I don't care what stat I'm being told about 3,500. There'll be 6,000 at that match Friday night in my head. But no, I'm so looking forward to it. Derry Shamrock Rovers, absolute cracker, live in RT2. And of course, Shamrock Rovers kicked off with a 3-0 win. A mention for UCD, always going to be a tough game. By all accounts, they acquitted themselves quite well in the first half. Had a couple of great chances, Stu, to take the lead. Didn't take them. Then they obviously got undone in the second half. But to be fair to Andy Myler, and he will be fully aware of this, those games are bonus games. They won't define his season. It'll be the games against Drogheda, Shelburne, Finn Harps, those games, and he'll be fully aware of that. So I'm sure from his point of view and the players, it was great to obviously lock horns with Shamrock Rovers, the champions. But they're playing Finn Harps on Friday night at home, and that's a huge game for them. They have a game under their belt. Finn Harps didn't play, and that's a massive game for them. And when you look at the double header, obviously over the weekend, UCD are home to Shells then on the Monday night, which promises to be a cracker. But they're the games that will be more realistic in terms of if they can pick up points or where they can pick up points. The other one that I want to mention, Stu, Friday night, Bowes Dundalk. Bowes, of course, didn't play. Dundalk, a game under their belt. I'm interested to see the Bowes team, because we've praised Keith Long many times about having to literally start all over again or build a squad. Now, they have kept. There's a bit of a narrative out there that they've lost a load of players. They have lost 5 or 6 players, but they still have kept a good chunk of what was there. And they've added 3 or 4. But I'm interested to see just how to go about things. And of course, Keith and Trevor are very, very good managers, as we know. So I'm just interested to see how that plays out, because a lot of people are a bit worried or suggesting maybe Bowes won't be anywhere near where they've been the last 2 or 3 years. I still think they'll be hovering in around those European positions too.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Look, I think what we can say is, based on Keith's record, Keith and Trevor's record, should always include Trevor, to be fair. Based on their record, there's no reason to suggest they're not going to be competitive. Mm. It's that simple. They've proven year in, year out that they can go to the well and they can do it again. The only thing I would worry about is it's the players they've lost. It's Keith Buckley, Kelly. Talking about Bowes here, like, you know, I just think it's a as much a psychological blow to the crowd as anything, because these are, like, Keith was obviously synonymous with Bowes. He was their leader. He was so attached to the club. He was adored by the fans. They absolutely loved him, and I think there might be an element of not Bucco, you know, this kind of way, like,
anyone,
you know,
but Bucco,
yeah. So I think I don't know. Let's see what the atmosphere is going to be like in Dalyman for that. I expect it to be, you know, to be hopping, to be quite honest, because they make a great noise.
There was a few tweets I was looking at on Twitter earlier, and I made the point to somebody as well, and I think John O'Connor actually tweeted this. It must be so frustrating for Bowes at the moment, because I know even I was so excited about going down to Sligo last week for the game, and I think Bowes were bringing 600 or 700 down, and maybe a few more, which is a huge away crowd when you think about it.
Yeah.
And they've sold out season tickets and broken records and all that kind of stuff, but yet they're only able to hold 3.5, whatever is the capacity at the minute, because of that, obviously, that main stand and then the stand behind the goal. If Bowes, now, I don't think this is far-fetched what I'm saying, right? If Bowes had a Tala at the moment, or what could be a similar size? Say they had
a Tornis Cross, or
a ground that could cater for between 8,000 to 10,000 people, or between 7.5 to 10.
Well, it'll be 6. Obviously, the Daily Mount redevelopment will be is earmarked.
Oh yeah, but I'm just talking about right now at this moment in time.
Yeah.
If they had a ground that could cater for 8,000 fans, there'd be 8,000 people in the ground.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Like it's unbelievable. And John more or less reinforced that today.
You know, it was over 4,000 at the in Talker the other night.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it was like, honestly, I felt like I just went back 15 years in the space of 2 minutes. Couldn't believe the crowd, like, you know. So you might even argue that for other clubs.
I get the Bowes thing.
And look, completely.
I know at the moment, but it must be such a frustration. Imagine the revenue they'd be bringing in every week.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, and that's the difficulty for them now at the moment as they obviously have to just wait for the Daily Mount redevelopment to happen. When you're dealing with Dublin City Council and issues like this, you know, you're going through the design phase, and so these things go year on year. Like, I mean, there's five from my own kids, and in the school redevelopment that they've gone through. Like, there's 5 years of a design phase in when it comes to schools. So in other words, it could take up to 5 years. Just to get through a design phase.
Here's one, and we're seeing
something similar happening in the Daily Mount redevelopments, you know.
Here's one for you then, right? And I'm making the point about how so frustrating it must be for, say, the Bowes hierarchy. And the fans, they have a brilliant support. And I love going down to Daily Mount. They have a brilliant support. And it's a great... It's almost like an occasion each match. It's brilliant. And the stuff they've done, and we've praised them for this off the pitch. I think they've been the best in terms of the community work and all that, and buying into all that identity. Neil O'Riordan spoke about it here last week, all that kind of stuff. And to be fair to all the other clubs, they're following suit and they're all doing it now, and it's brilliant. Is there a danger? I'm just throwing this out there for people, right? Is there a danger, Stu? You mentioned that. Say for argument's sake, that takes 4 years. The ground
from now,
right?
Okay, yeah.
And Bowes lost the few players now, and you're looking at Keith Long, and you're thinking, okay, I have to start again, maybe, and will we do as well? And say they finish seventh,
yeah,
right. And then they lose another couple of players, and all of a sudden, the whole Bowes story and them riding high, and they're kind of going down into the doldrums a little bit. Do you think then, by the time, because timing's everything, by the time that ground comes around, will there still be 8,000 or 9,000 wanting to go and watch them? Now I think there will. But I think so.
I think I get your point. I do think they'll have to be kind of a little bit fluid in how they go about doing things. But to be fair to them, they've proven the club that they can do that. I think Bowes will always be an attractive place to go from a player's point of view. And I just only have to allude to the training ground. I mean, they've just been granted $300,000 to do up the training ground. Down in DCU in Glasnevin there, and there's redevelopment. They're going to redevelop that whole complex even further. A gym, offices. So they're based in the capital. Daily Mount, doesn't matter how dilapidated it is from a player's point of view, it's a proper place to go and play football. So I think that's the attraction. I think that's what they have to keep doing to attract players to go there. Now the redevelopment will happen. It will happen. There's a commitment to do that. It just depends on how quickly, at what level. Now, it might happen quicker now because, you know...
If Shells are out of the picture.
It actually may happen quicker now for them because I don't know what's going to happen, Alan, but Dublin City Council might just go, well, we're just going to go with what we have now available, so let's just go with this. And that could work in their benefit. And obviously, as that happens, the club will, you know, they'll deal with the scenario, and they'll pivot whatever. You know, you have to just react to whatever the circumstances are at the time. But there's no getting away from the fact that Phibsborough, and I never thought I'd say this because I'm up the road in Finglas. Like, Phibsborough's cool. I don't know what happened there.
I'm rubbing off on you.
Like, I cycle through Phibsborough coming to work every day
just to see it,
and I just feel I feel cool for about 5 minutes.
next week we'll have draft what are they called, draft beers, or them, what's the beers to make themselves,
the IPAs and
all
we're so old, Alan. Oh my god, the hipster.
See,
what is it,
this is the Bowes effect.
What's the phrase, Paul? The, no, for the beer. Craft beers, yeah.
What did I say? Draft beers.
Oh my God, we're struggling.
It's just something, it cropped up today. As I said, I saw a couple of tweets from people and I was just thinking, yeah, imagine Bose at the moment with a proper ground fully developed. They would be getting 7,500, 8,000. Yeah. It's incredible, the whole Bose thing story, because they do it as well as anybody in terms of the ticket sales as well. So Pats are trying to be hipsters now as well, are they? They're all hipsters. Do you drink craft beers? Do you, Stu?
No, I don't. I'm red wine all the way. out of the fucking bottle.
Yeah. Yes, Stu. Well, I shouldn't have expected anything else.
Red wine.
Straight out, I'm red wine. Oh, yeah. Do you know what I am?
You're a Prosecco man.
Prosecco.
You're such a punce.
We're proper rock and roll, aren't we? Red wine and Prosecco. People are not going to tune out.
I should point out, I cycle through Faithburg going to work, but when I come home, I go through Drumcondra.
Okay.
And I'm even cooler.
Fuck off. Okay, so there are the fixtures, Stu. We've ran through them there. Derry Shamrock Rovers, Bose Dundalk, Drogheda Shells, Pat Sligo and UCD Harps. There's a double whammy this weekend as well. Fixtures on the Monday night, UCD Shells, Bose Pats, I'll be at that as well. Derry Sligo, Dundalk Harps, Shamrock Rovers, Drogheda. It's great to have the football back.
It is great, isn't it?
That's brilliant.
It is. It turns in a day.
It's absolutely brilliant.
You know, from the difference from Thursday to Friday is incredible. So
there's
a real buzz about the place, I have to say.
Of course there is. And a big real buzz about Irish football in the season, as we mentioned many times before. Hopefully it delivers. Got off to a good start on Friday and we're really looking forward to it. Stewie, that was episode 2. Thank you.
Are you driving up Derry on Friday?
I don't lift.
How's the car? Is it back to Monday?
Shea from Best Drive is coming with me just in case.
This week's sponsor, Best Drive. Best Drive.
Paul Morris, our producer extraordinaire, coming up with 3,500 for the brandy well.
Let me finish. Best Drive, not a guarantee.
Stop your messing.
We still love Benetti, of course.
You can give the shout out to Benetti this
Benetti
week.
You're so beautiful, Benetti. I love you, Benetti.
Big thank you, Benetti Menswear.
A bigger thank you, Benetti. A bigger thank you.
You're a flying form today, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I just got told my fucking job could be at risk. And fucking
he's just lost his job and he's in great form.
I'm going back over to talk about the private acquisition of my company.
See? Are you going to take over Irish football? How long? What's the time frame on that?
10 years.
10?
Yeah, to get rid of your man John Neal. You know, talking about strategic plans and all that shit. Just fucking do something, will you?
Okay, that was episode 2. Big thanks to Vinny and Benetti Menswear as well, the sponsors. Thanks very much. We will be back next week and hopefully I'll be able to tell you about a game I've gone to and actually seen rather than this weekend. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.